Hello and welcome to another episode of the Bahamas Reef Environment Educational Foundation's Our Blue Bahamas podcast. Today we are talking about weathering the storm, hurricane preparedness through a conservation lens. We are now in the 2025 Atlantic hurricane season. It started on June 1st and it ends in November, right? The end of November.
The end of November, yes.
And sometimes, you know, depending, it's extended or it may be a little shorter, but we've seen the trend of it, you know, sometimes extending beyond what the typical Atlantic hurricane season would be. And today we're exploring the hurricane preparedness, climate resilience, and the role of conservation in protecting the Bahamas, and how sustainable practices can strengthen community safety and environmental protection. I'm your host, Crystal Darling Sargent, and my guest today is Shantez Dillett Wilson, who is the Assistant Director of Strategic Communications at the Disaster Risk Management Authority. Welcome, Shantez.
Hi, Crystal. It's great to be here today.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about what you do and the importance of the Disaster Risk Management Authority, or DRM.
Yes. So like you said, I am the Assistant Director with responsibility for strategic communications. It's a long and fancy title to say that I'm in charge of making sure the public knows what we're doing and what they need to do. As simple as that.
Well said. Very well said.
So, and a lot of that does include public education. So our Don't Wait campaign, which is our hurricane preparedness, a public information and education campaign, comes under my purview. So when you see us doing walkabouts in your communities and giving out pamphlets and flyers, when you see us on radio and here on podcasts, you know, all of that comes under me. Just in general, making sure that the public knows, you know, how they can protect themselves.
Wonderful. And it's very important, especially this time of year. Mm-hmm. I think that this is a very important and you know, even national conversation about how we can better protect ourselves and our community in the storms and in natural disasters in general. So I want you to take us into this discussion, talking about some of the biggest risks the Bahamas face. We know that we're in what they call the hurricane belt,
yes,
right?
Hurricane
and so a lot of times you see hurricanes forming off the coast of South Africa, mm-hmm. you know, and they come up, they kind of, what's the word, like, you know.
Spin up.
Yeah, spin up, spiral up. And they often pass the Bahamas. So tell us about some of the biggest risks that we're facing as a country.
So, you know, I don't have to tell the Bahamas. We are an age-old member of the Hurricane Belt, the Hurricane Alley. From since long before our ancestors were here, the Bahamas has been battered by hurricanes. The word hurricane is, you know, from the indigenous people of the Caribbean, Rurigan. So, you know, we are veterans of hurricanes. And as we see climate change making conditions hotter and, you know, just more intense altogether, we are seeing that really intensify. What that means is we are having more frequent storms, it's seeming, on average. But more importantly, we're having stronger, more intense storms and more unpredictable storms. You mm-hmm. talked about, you know, the usual path of them forming off of West Africa and coming our way just mm-hmm. above the equator.
They also can come from the other way, right?
So
from the Mexico side.
But these days we're seeing more and more that they are, you know, kind of coming from everywhere.
Everywhere.
Our first named, mm-hmm. and luckily, you know, it didn't come our way, but our very first named storm of the season formed up north near Bermuda, which mm-hmm. is not unheard of, but absolutely not normal. You know, we're seeing a lot more abnormal behavior. Last year, you know, we went to bed one night and, you know, the mm-hmm. disturbance we were looking at, they were saying about a 20% chance of formation. Next thing you know, they were saying within 24 hours, our southern islands were mm-hmm. going to be hit. That was Oscar.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing rapid intensification. in a way that, you know, we just wouldn't normally see even a decade ago. You know, Florida can attest to that. Hurricanes like Helene last year really battered them. They had, what, 3 to 4 storms they were hit
they
by?
Did.
And at least two of them rapidly intensified over the course of about 24 to 36 hours. So, you know, that is the main hazard, natural hazard that the Bahamas is facing. But we're not limited to hurricanes. You know, this year, we have seen an inordinate number of wildfires. And last year, we actually saw quite a few wildfires as well. I think in general, we would call that time of year our dry season, but now it's become so dry, like droughts have become so common for not just us across the Caribbean that, you know, we're considering making it a wildfire season. We've put together a wildfire task force because clearly we need to increase our capacity as a country in how we're dealing with these. And, you know, in all of these hazards, there is a role to play in climate, you know, climate change and climate action and, you know, conservational action. So,
I'm glad that you brought up the climate change issue. What are some updates to the National Hurricane Preparedness Kit?
So most of it has stayed the same. The things that you need to keep in your home, obviously you want to have alternate power supplies, you know, your batteries, etc. These days we're also recommending like backup power sources, like the backup power packs. You can get the little car battery sized ones, I think at Kelly's and CBS and stuff like that. Obviously there's the power packs for your smaller devices. Most people have them anyway, because most of us who are digitally linked in and whatnot. And these days they even have, you know, solar ones, etc. There's a lot of different options. We recommend those. We, you know, the usual 7 days worth of food and clean water, bottled water, 1 gallon per person per day. You know, the usual kit you should definitely have, but some of the things that we've changed with the intensification of storms is we now recommend that you have a small hatchet or other some other type of chopping or cutting device so that you can make emergency egresses, emergency exits if you need to. You know, one of the things that we, you know, very heartrendingly and strikingly saw in Dorian was people trapped in their roofs and struggling to exit because of the flooding. You want to ensure that you have a hatchet that's easily attainable, that's so that you can chop your way out of your roof or in other scenarios, you know, can break your window glass if that's and chop through your shutters if that's the emergency exit space. We're also recommending personal flotation devices as well.
Especially with the storm surge.
With storm surge. And, you know, a lot of people, when they think of hurricanes, the first thing they think of is the wind and, you know, it blowing things away and the projectiles that are within that. But actually, the thing that kills most people, both here and everywhere that experiences cyclones and hurricanes, is the storm surge. It is the most dangerous part of a hurricane by far.
And I do want to follow, like, up on, you know, that whole point right there. The storm surge, the way the hurricane looks, you know, it looks like just a ball of wind, right, blowing. And so it, you know, psychologically, you're looking at a hurricane, you're just like, oh, wind, it's going to blow everything down. But because the Bahamas is an archipelagic nation, right, we're surrounded by water, right? So there's no way, you know what I mean? There's no way. And like I said, it's not like a, you know, horrifying thing or to strike fear. But it is very important to know how to handle the water or to brace for a possible impact from storm surge, right?
Absolutely.
Especially and with such small, flat.
Yes, I was going to say, we are low-lying islands, all of us, you know, unless you live on Mount Alvernia itself, you know, we're all within what we call low-lying coastal areas. There's not a single Bahamian that's not living in what you would call a low-lying coastal area, which means that you're almost never, unfortunately, well, I wouldn't say almost never, but, you know, as long as you're within, you know, a mile or two of the of the ocean, you know, you are within surge zoning generally. And I would really urge people to know the surging threat, the surge risk of your neighborhood in a general sense. Here in Nassau, if you live anywhere along the southern corridor, know that you are high risk. Be prepared that if a Cat 4 or Cat 5 hurricane is coming Nassau's way, you should be preparing yourself to move.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to say that. That's a real big chunk of Bahamians. And I know Bahamians really do not like to leave their houses. Mm-hmm. But one of our big messages this year is that if you are given the indication, whether it's a voluntary or mandatory evacuation notice, I mean, we don't have strictly a mandatory. Mm-hmm. We won't be physically moving anybody from their space. But, you know, if an evacuation order or recommendation is given for your neighborhood, we very, very much recommend that you move, because surge is nothing to be played with. It can be very, very dangerous. And a lot of our homes are unfortunately in surge zones. Mm-hmm. And if you do not move, you know, the DRM Act of 2022 states that the government is not mandated to put first responder life and limb at risk. Like, they're not, we're not going to endanger our first responders, so they will not be eligible to come and help you until the all clear is given. Mm-hmm. So you cut yourself off from assistance until the all clear is given. And so, you know, that's not comfortable. That is not a nice situation to be in. That's a very, very frightening situation to be in. We recommend that you go to your nearest shelter outside of the flooding or surging zone, or, you know, if you have a friend to stay with in a more safe part of the island, we recommend that you stay with them.
Okay. So I was getting into shelters and emergency evacuations, and, you know, it makes a lot of sense sometimes, you know, when you think about it, that why people would feel reluctant to leave their homes, because your house is symbolic and you have like a emotional connection with your
home.
It's the place of refuge. It's the place where you go to rest. It is your protection when you face a regular storm, right? A regular thunderstorm or, you know, windstorm or anything. Your house is the place that you run to, right? So there's that very strong connection. And a lot of people, they may not feel comfortable with the thought of, hey, they're saying to move to a shelter or to evacuate. And I think the fact that you used the perfect phrase earlier, the term hurricane veterans, right? So Bahamians feel so, it's, you know, typically, this is my house, and, you know, we've been in all kind of hurricanes, you know.
And so there's this. It survived Hurricane Andrew.
Exactly. So there's a lot of, like, reluctance and, you know, like, people feel like, you know, they can rely on staying in their home, come with me. What would you say to those individuals? Because this is, as we've seen in Hurricane Dorian, a lot of times this is life and death.
It absolutely is. Like, you know, and that is one of the things that I lead with. Like, this, you know, is the decision between keeping yourself and your family safe and not. It could be life and death for you and your family. Mm-hmm. Protect what is most important to you, your loved ones, and make a plan to evacuate. And I do say, you know, on our website, getready.gov.bs, we have resources on how to make family plans inclusive of evacuation plans. I understand how uncomfortable, and I you know, there's nothing that I can say about, you know, it'll never be as comfortable as staying at home, but, you know, getting a roof blown off or, you know, being in the middle, your house flooding and surging is also pretty uncomfortable. I'll start with that. But, you know, there are ways that you can make it less uncomfortable, or at the very very least less frightening, and that's by having a plan in place beforehand. Like I said, when you plan ahead, for starters, you can ensure that you maybe don't have to go to a shelter if you have a friend, family member, community that you can shelter with instead, you know, and they are in somewhere deemed safe, a safe zone and a safe structure, you know, then yes, by all means, you know, make those arrangements instead. Mm-hmm. You know, personally, I do know the nearest shelter to my house in the event that I do need that. But my plan A in the event that I need to evacuate is my brother's house, which is not far and is a much more comfortable place for me to stay. So by all means, do try to find, you know, compromises that might be more comfortable for you, but have those plans in place, your evacuation plan in place beforehand. So, you know, my brother has been notified that he is my, and what that means for us as a family, you know, like as far as, you know, what I'm bringing with me, you know, like my, who's doing what in the event that, you know, a hurricane comes, who's putting up shutters, who's helping who with what, you know, what, who's gathering supplies, you know, like all of those things, ensure that you have them in your family plan beforehand. If there's people that need additional assistance, you know, I have tenants, and my tenants just recently had a newborn child, and this is, they do not come from the Bahamas. They, you know, will not likely need help with preparing themselves for hurricanes. So the plan, you know, incorporates them as part of my extended, you know, family plan, as it were. You know, all of these things in your family plan should be considered. Are there vulnerable people, people with medical needs, special needs in your family? Does your plan accommodate for that? Are there children? You know, does your family plan accommodate for that? You know, do you have your own transportation? Not everyone in the Bahamas does. Does your plan accommodate for how you're going to get where you need to go if you need to evacuate? All of these things need to be considered in a family plan. And like I said, getready.gov.bs has templates for family plans that you can utilize in the event that, not in the event, you can utilize to put that together for your family. And yes. I will say.
So use it anyway.
Yeah, so use it. Use it anyway.
So when would you recommend people start using, start, like, get on it?
Before now.
Before now. So we are already late, y'all.
Yeah,
we
need to get on this. I generally say that, you know, you should be putting your family plan together before the hurricane season. You know, you want to really be making sure that you're at least, you know, putting the groundwork for that in, you know, by April, May, and you know, you can start gathering supplies in May as well. May is preparedness month, hurricane preparedness month. I recommend, you know, just really focusing on that throughout May. But, you know, the second best time to do it is now. Second best time to do it is now. You want to ensure that this is in a lot of this is in place well before the storm is even darkening, you know, our shores, or even threatening to darken our shores, because at that point it can be too late. You'll be scrambling. We all know what it looks like at the food store a few days before a hurricane is about to hit. You don't want to be scrambling to do those things, you know, while you're also scrambling to you know, do your last minute preparations.
So what I'm hearing from you, and this is some great advice, but what I'm, and even things I haven't thought about, and I find myself, I think I'm very responsible when it comes down to being prepared. Like, my nickname is literally the Girl Scout.
Nice.
Right? They told me, because I always have the extra things that I need. But you're saying to have assigned roles to get the timeline in place, right, of what, you know, what we're going to do, you know, when, you know, 72 hours from the storm. Well, you know,
absolutely.
2 days, 1 day, like the whole countdown of events, and know where the shelters are in your area.
Yes.
Know where the nearest shelter is.
And that is also on our website.
Yeah.
The full shelter list is on our website, and we're currently working on getting that visualized as maps for each island as well, so that you can, you know, you don't just have to read through the list and look at the
and wonder, like, oh, where is that?
Which street that is? Is that close
street? Right?
No, it's like, you know, like, you know, we want to, we're getting it visualized as well, so that you can be able to easily see, like, well, I know that's my house, and it seems like these two right here
exactly
are my closest.
Because they'll be like,
ones.
Which one is that? And sometimes we have, like, the same name of different roads,
yeah,
so it may get a little complicated or similar names. But yes, it's very important. So seek out your shelters, and they can find this information at getready.gov.bs as well.
Yes.
So that is your, please make note of this, right? Getready.gov.bs. That is what you need to go and check out today. You need to take a look at it. You need to start making your plans in case there was an emergency. Also, planning. I love that what you said about planning. And I want to ask you a question, because I think several people found themselves in this, you know, just listening to the radio, watching the news reports. A lot of people found themselves when we had the last big storms in these same predicaments. I wanted to leave, or I thought about leaving, but I couldn't convince my husband, and so the whole family stayed, or I couldn't convince my parents, and I'm a child, so I didn't know what to do. What advice would you give those individuals who really, you know, are in a way locked into the decision of one person who may not be making the best choices for the family?
Well, I'd want you to impress upon them what, you know, the government is saying, you know, right now, which is what I said before, is that the law now mandates that first responders will not be coming for you until after the all clear. Not because we don't want to protect life, but it's actually because we do, because mm-hmm. we don't want to endanger them and because they have an important job to do. So, you know, impress upon them, like, we will be on our own if we do not move. Start, you know, early. Once again, mm-hmm. this is one of the benefits of starting early, so you can accustom them to it and talk over what a plan mm-hmm. might look like with them mm-hmm. so that they can start to give input. You can get some buy-in and start to make, you know, some appeasements that might make it easier for them to wrap their head around moving. You know, if you're a child whose parents don't want to, you know, I'm mm-hmm. afraid, you know, you're in mm-hmm. a little bit. I mean, I think kids can be mm-hmm. really important vehicles yes. to get this information yes. to their parents. And so do keep at it. Do, you know, like, yeah. talk to your teacher about
nobody
it.
Nobody like, keeps to your you about or, it. Your camp advisor. Like, yeah. there is no one who's going to hold you more accountable than a child.
Yes.
I don't know why, but they just always remember, you're not supposed to be doing that. You're supposed to do this. The, you know, like they're so hardwired into following instructions.
Yes.
Right? And so out of the mouths of babes, please listen. If they, you know, if it's something important like this, right?
And there's a role for kids at every stage of yes. this as well. Like, you know, yes, when they're younger, it'll be much smaller. Maybe it's just kind of, so, you know, you should have a go bag, what we mm-hmm. call a go bag, which is something that you take with you that's already packed. Like, you know, once you see that a hurricane mm-hmm. may be coming your way, you pack a go bag just in case you need, you know, to evacuate. You have something that's very easy to carry with you but has everything that you need, and they can be helping to pack their own go bag, because maybe you can give them the allowance of one toy or one game, yeah. which we actually do recommend, something mm-hmm. for them to entertain themselves with in the event that you find yourself mm-hmm. in a shelter that, yeah. you know, the shelter's not going
to
be providing
entertainment. Or maybe something,
so.
Or maybe to help with the checklist, or go through the checklist
yeah.
with you and double check the list.
As they get older, you can give mm-hmm. them more responsibility. They can be doing things like, you know, I've never met mm-hmm. a teenager that doesn't know how to, you know, use Google mm-hmm. Maps. They can be mapping out how you're getting mm-hmm. to beforehand. Once again, you should have your best routes to get to your shelter or wherever you're sheltering. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can be talking about, okay, we'll go this road or this road because this is less likely to flood. You know, these are things kids are capable of. Mm. So involve your kids in this process so that they are less scared
yes.
when it's time to happen. When it's time to happen, they're already familiar. They already know what they need to be doing, and they're less likely to freeze or panic
yes.
or, you know, get distracted and do something else.
like this is good because it's like they're already halfway prepared, or, you know, like
exactly.
They already understand why we're doing this mm-hmm. and that, okay, yes, this emergency is happening right now, but we already have something in place that we can use because we're here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what this also sounds like for me? I'm throwing out these ideas to our listeners now. This sounds like a great family activity.
It is.
It's a great family activity for everyone to grab their bags, the designated bags, and to pack them and to create these checklists. They could go on getready.gov.bs and make sure that you have everything in these bags that mm-hmm. you can, or start building the bags now. This month we're going to be purchasing toilet papers, right? Because next month it's going to be canned goods like tuna and so forth, or, you know, or just adding to those things as we go along, because it is something that has to be very strategic.
Absolutely.
Right?
I think that you really like grasp onto something really mm-hmm. important there as well, is that starting early means that you can do this over a length of time, mm-hmm. which ultimately is cheaper.
Very true. That's what I was saying.
Things tough out there. Trying to put together a full hurricane mm-hmm. kit within
hurricanes are forming faster, like you
exactly.
said, right? So we see them coming up, and it's just like you hear like the week before that, mm-hmm. okay, there may be a hurricane coming. And so you have a week to prepare, right?
Yes, and you're scrambling around,
yes.
maybe.
Everyone else is
everyone
too.
Supply yes. and demand comes into play,
yes.
and the things
yes.
are expensive. But not just that, you don't have time to shop around and compare prices. When you have
exactly.
start early, you can be like, you could go mm-hmm. to all the different places and be
get
like, well, you
flashlight,
know what?
Your battery.
It's cheaper over here,
yeah.
it's cheaper over there, and you can put it together. You can even buy in bulk with friends when you have additional time.
Very true.
But just in a general sense, you can also just kind of spread it out so it's not as burdensome, even mm-hmm. if it's technically not cheaper because, you know, trying to buy groceries, enough groceries for a family of four for 7 days, you know, like to last for 7 days is can be expensive all at once. But if it's just every week, you're like, I'll just add a few extra cans of tuna this week and a couple bags of grits next week, you know, and whatever, then you spread out over, you know, time, it's just not as financially burdensome. So it's better for you financially to start early as well.
For sure. For sure. And I know that we've also, just something I want to touch on just for a little bit, I know that we have added things, like you mentioned, some new things that like battery packs and stuff that we're adding to the hurricane preparedness kit. Are there any things that we are kind of removing or moving away from as we, you know, think about the 2025 hurricane kit? Is there anything that you advise people, well, you know, we don't do that anymore?
I mean, I wouldn't say quite we don't do that anymore. Redundancy is the heart of good disaster preparedness. Yes. So it's usually we do that, but we also focus more on this. Mm-hmm. This is more of a redundancy now. And one of them is, you know, paper anything. We're really big on you should digitize. So, you know, we always talk about have a, you know, copy of your documents, and you should still have a copy of your documents kept in a dry place so that you could grab them and go. But we really, really recommend that you digitize all of your documents, that your passport, your driver's license, the deed to your house, the title for your car, whatever important financial documents you have, your health insurance and other health records, if you have someone with health issues, have all of those in a single space. Digitize, and we actually recommend a dual digitization from the point of view of have it somewhere on the cloud, so it's, you know, it has that redundancy there, but also have it on, you know, the adults in your families or your home units' devices as well, so that it, in the event that you can't access the cloud, you have it there. Redundancy, or, you know, fail safes, backup plans are the biggest part of good disaster planning. Okay. Personally and for our country.
Yes, for sure, for sure. And so with backup plans, and I'm going to pivot a little bit on this same thing. And you know, people always say prevention is better than cure and everything. So I'm going to tap a little bit into something that we preach on this podcast over and over again, that we have a lot of natural barriers for storm protection. Like we talk about shutters and stuff that people put on their homes and, you know, try to protect. But the natural barriers, which is why we emphasize so much that we want to protect the coral reefs and the mangroves and our rocky shores and our sandy shores, right, from unsustainable development, and that we can build with these structures in place, and we can also be a part of the natural environment that we want to be a part of, right? Mm-hmm. So we're not against development, but we also want to make sure that we're doing it in the best way possible so that the protection is in place and we're also benefiting from it. So when you have strong storm surge and a lot of those elements, the mangroves, the coral reefs and everything else is taken away, then you have that bigger risk of flooding. Absolutely. Right? And flooding surging does not just, you know, make it hard to drive, right, or pass through the roads, but it can also damage your vehicles, right? And we're talking about coastal and inland flooding as well. So, and removal of inland mangroves and forestry that usually used to, and marshland that usually absorb, right, the water and balance. Yeah, exactly. And then also the our pine forest, where we see a lot of the natural water, right, our natural water reserves, like in those areas. These are all very important parts of our ecosystem. So this is why we emphasize protecting them for moments like these, right? And I just wanted to put that in there to kind of tie everything into, you know, the marine conservation aspect as well.
You know, I want to say that you're absolutely right. And, you know, DRM Authority and the Ministry of Disaster Risk Management, whom we, you know, work hand in hand with, we don't have direct purview over those kinds of things, even though you're absolutely right. They have a quite an impact on the way that our natural environment responds to multiple different types of hazards. So, but we don't have any direct carriage of that. How we can influence, though, is as a part of our national disaster policy and mandated by the DRM Act of 2022, is we are meant to direct, and we have not started yet. You know, we're only a year, less than a year old, so we're rolling up to a few things. We're hoping by the end of this year we'll have launched some of this, but multi-agency hazard risk mapping is what it's called, and it's basically taking data on the multiple different hazards. So hurricanes, of course, we're talking surge, we're talking flooding, we're talking
fires.
The fires, we're talking about, you know, where we're seeing heat and drought, and, you know, mapping those in a multi-hazard way that's measuring how different areas are responding to risk. And then, you know, within that, there is a mandate for zoning based on that. So you were talking about development. We will never be the agency, unfortunately, that dictates where you can and can't build. Mm-hmm. But we will be providing that information with, you know, an advocacy point to say this should be guiding the way that we're deciding where we build and don't build. Sure. So, you know, we're right there with you. This to say that we should be pushing. This should not. We shouldn't be building here because based on our risk profile, you know, this is not a good place to build. Based on our risk profile, this will disrupt our water tables and cause flooding. This will disrupt our mangroves and cause surge, like open us up to surge and other risks. So yeah, the whole thing about risk mapping, it's the main reason for risk mapping is, well, the first main reason is to know our evacuation, where we need evacuation and for response.
And shelters.
But for longer term, it's also for, you know, how do we then plan how we use that those resources and those lands based on how these risks are mapped. So, like I said, we're building out that database and hoping that we can start that mapping within this fiscal year.
Okay, awesome.
This coming fiscal year.
And thank you so much, because that was the last question I wanted to ask you. Why is it essential to include conservation and all of the other elements that you mentioned just now in our national disaster strategy moving forward? And that is just a perfect way, I think, to, as we come to a close in our time for the show. And I really want to thank you so much for the amount of information that you provided today. This was a wonderful conversation, and I'm really happy, and I really believe that a lot of our listening audience would have learned something new, and just as much as I've learned today. And please remember to be ready, right? Be storm ready. Like,
yes.
You may not see it coming. You don't have to wait until it starts coming, but be ready. And you can go on. Please remind us of the
getready.gov.bs, or you can follow any of our social media. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on LinkedIn, and we're on WhatsApp as well. So you can follow our WhatsApp channel if you want, you know, information and alerts coming straight to your phone. So yes, once again, getready.gov.bs, your one-stop shop for everything disaster preparedness for the country.
Okay, thank you so much, Shantae. Thank you for that.